This is a special holiday bonus edition of Judaism Unbound. What's love got to do with it? The Song of Songs. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Lex Rofberg.
And I'm Wendy Lash.
And as you notice, neither one of us is Dan Liebenson. That was true last bonus episode, and it's true for this one as well. As you heard in the intro, this will probably be my last time ever doing a This Is Judaism Unbound, as I went a little off the rails with that falsetto. But we're running with it, because today is not just your normal bonus episode. Today is a steamy bonus episode where we're going to look at themes of love, and we're going to connect it all to the book called Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim in Hebrew. And it's funny on one level, because you wouldn't think that the steamiest, sexiest stuff comes from, you know, millennia old text. But I promise you, like, look up this book, it really does. So we're going to hop into the episode and look at Song of Songs and how it connects to this month of Elul that we're in that precedes the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah. But before we do, I want to just resituate us in sort of where we are and just remind that this is part of our Elul Unbound initiative, which is a chance to really experiment with a month, the month of Elul, that hasn't been so deeply defined. It has a general sense of anticipation of leading up to the new year. We've been calling it an on-ramp, but it also is kind of flexible. There's some daily practices, hearing the shofar. That's why Wendy gave us that beautiful shofar blast at the beginning of this episode. But besides the shofar and sort of a daily recitation of this little part of Psalms, the book of Psalms, there's not a whole lot that's been defined. So we're trying to rewire it, unbound it in that way that we do. And today, the form that that's going to take is through a look at this ancient text, the Song of Songs, that we believe has contemporary relevance. So that's a little bit about where we are. Pivoting, to the Song of Songs, here's sort of what it is. It's part of the writings section of the Tanakh. Tanakh is an acronym, Torah, Prophets, and Writings. Song of Songs comes from the writings part, which has some real gems in it. And it's this text all about, like, you could call it a love story, but it's really like a love and sex story. And it's not so ridiculous to call it ancient pornography. But at the same time, it's not that it's like raunchy and in some sort of ugly way. It's actually really beautiful. And it has this incredible history and also a rich contemporary life of its own. So that's sort of what the Song of Songs is. Wendy, what's your connection to the Song of Songs? Have you connected much to it in the past?
My first read on the Song of Songs was like, or meh, or both. You know, things like, you know, your neck is like the Tower of Solomon, that didn't quite do it for me. But I've come over time because it's been associated.
Your neck's fine. Your neck's totally fine.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Yeah. It just doesn't look like the Tower of Solomon, and I'm glad. Yeah. But I've come to connect to it over the years. We have some family history. My son thinks it's probably one of the funniest books in the canon, in all of the Tanakh. And we have these conversations about it. And so it's invited me to enjoy it more and to see what might be below the surface of just reading it literally.
What you just said about how there's sort of literal ways to read it and less literal ways to read it is actually really crucial to understanding this book. It's true of any book, but here it's extra crucial because there's two ways of relating to the Song of Songs, each with a rich history. One is that this book is about a man and a woman in love with each other. I would argue probably what whoever wrote this book or whatever set of people wrote this book were trying to do. They were trying to write a story about human beings that were in love with each other. Allegorically, there's a rich history of reading this not as a love story between two human beings, but as a love story between the collective Jewish people and God. So all of the imagery about man loving woman in X way, or a woman loving a man in X way, it's actually about God loving the Jewish people, or the Jewish people loving God. And that, as you could imagine, really radically shifts how the book is read, how it's interpreted, what it means to folks, if it means anything to folks. And the other piece I wanted to name is that it's not really so much a part of Elul as Elul has been practiced. There is an understanding that the letters of Elul, if you break it down, correspond to like an acrostic poem, which is Ani Ledodi Vedodi Li. You might have heard it at a wedding if you've been to one recently.
It on a wedding ring.
Yeah, exactly. And it loosely translates to I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. And the reason that that's connected to Elul is because the first letter of each word, Aleph, then Lamed, then Vav, then Lamed, are the same letters as Elul. That's how you spell Elul. And that quote does come from the Song of Songs. So that's sort of the connection that is made. But there's not so much of a practice of like reading the Song of Songs as a book, as a preparation for high holidays or something. That doesn't exist so much. And it's actually been assigned to a different time of year, which is Passover. My argument is that we should stop reading it on Passover. Or like, if you want to read it any time of year, go for it. But that we should stop attributing ritualistic reading of Song of Songs to that time of year, because we already have the Exodus, which is jam-packed and worthy of an entire holiday all its own and shouldn't have to share with Song of Songs. But we have this time of year now that doesn't really have a book associated with it, where I think Song of Songs could come in and where it could help inform us in our introspective work as we look at ourselves, not only to look inward at us, but look inward specifically with respect to our romantic relationships.
I think that love and forgiveness are things that we don't always associate together. And so for me, Song of Songs being this love tome, whether it's about God or whether it's about somebody that you're in relationship, and I would add, and being in love with yourself, that all of those things are the underpinnings of being able to forgive yourself, to forgive others, to feel closeness, which is what this month is about, feeling closeness to your own human nature, which is not perfection, and feeling there's some God is in the field is a phrase that we use or has been given to us about this time. The God who's normally really far away is like walking in the fields looking for us to say, hey, honey, come on over and come back. And I really love you. I'm not this thing that you, I'm being so anthropomorphic, which is not how I see God or experience God. But that's what that's how this has been seen. And so the sense that if there's any Jewish month that's considered the month of love, it's Av, the month that we've just come out of, because there's a holiday of love, Tu B'Av, in that month. But I really think of Elul as the month of love from the Song of Songs. It takes love as a foundation in order to make change, in order to be really introspective and say, oh God, I screwed up here. Or to love another, or to find that loving connection to God.
I'm really glad you named how hard it is to think about God anthropomorphically, and how looking at this book like may lead us to talk about God in ways that we actually like aren't so in tune with, because that's definitely been my experience. And that's part of what's hard about this book, and actually why I tend to read it not as about God. I have this like weird relationship, because I'm like so pleased. I'm like genuinely thrilled that the rabbis in the first few centuries of the Common Era decided to read this about God, because if they had continued to read it as about human beings, they would have just seen it, like I said before, as like a pornographic text, and they might not have canonized it, and we might have lost it, and we might not be reading it at all anymore, forgetting which time of year we read it. So I'm glad they found like an allegorical loophole to read this in a different way so that it was canonized. And now that they've done that, I want to say we're going to reverse that now. So I want to read it again as really not bringing God in. There are ways in my life that I think about and connect to God. The God character that appears in this book, or really in most of the Bible's books, that's not the God that I'm sort of connecting with in a prayer setting or in my day-to-day life so much. But what I can do is absolutely read this text as being about people. And both informing in a positive sense how I could connect to people I love. So I do think there's actually really beautiful statements between the two characters here about what they love about each other. Some of them are really like strange. Like you were talking about, you know, neck being like the Tower of Solomon. Like I think there's some powerful stuff that we can learn from, and just the value of giving praise, even when it might feel that that praise is like self-evident. I think it's still important to name what we love about one another. But also, I want to learn from what this book doesn't get right. I actually don't think that we should treat biblical texts as like inherently correct until proven otherwise. I want to look here and say, okay, what's not so healthy? And also, like, who's not named here? This is definitely written as a heteronormative male-female love story. It's definitely using that narrative of love. And in a world where we really need to name and celebrate broader forms of love between not just male-identified and female-identified people, I think that we could need something beyond just Song of Songs to do that. And so we shouldn't see Song of Songs as like the only or the defining narrative of Jewish love, because it doesn't really capture the full picture of what love is. So I want to name that too. But basically, I do think that exploring this book from a value neutral place where elements of it are wonderful and elements of it are lacking could be really good for us.
Yeah. And I also think that it opens us up to metaphor. If we're looking at it metaphorically and not as physically what's happening or what people are feeling, and that language of metaphor opens things up, because our tradition writes about an anthropomorphic God, and it's very masculine oriented and it's completely heteronormative. And so if we think about this as a springboard of what other metaphors express our way of connecting to Judaism, to our experience of something that we might call God, to Elul as a time of course correcting ourselves and charting our, what's the mission that we're going to be on for the next year, our personal business plan, that the Song of Songs can remind us that metaphor is just a starting point for that which we actually feel, experience, and do.
I think that's a great, great point. And I could ramble myself right now, but I want to flip back to you, because you said something before we started recording that I think is just so cool. You talked about the idea of foreplay. We said this episode would be steamy, folks. Yes. You talked about the idea of foreplay, and I don't want to say what you said, but talk us through how foreplay looms in connection to Song of Songs.
Well, if you read this, it may feel like foreplay to you, watching a porno flick or reading a porno book. And Elul can be seen as foreplay for the High Holy Days. I feel like my soul's going to be damned for this, but we're better than on Judaism Unbound. But this sense of getting us ready and preparing us and getting us all juiced up, that's what foreplay is. And I think that's what Elul is for the High Holy Days, is it gets us ready and we're excited and we're there and we're present and give it to me.
That is, so foreplay unbound. But the last thing I wanted to say, and then we will close this, is that I wanted to bring in the voice of one of our fave characters of the Jewish past on Judaism Unbound. That's Rabbi Akiva. We've talked about him a bunch before and how he didn't start learning even the Hebrew alphabet until he was 40 years old, and why we should be inspired by him. Another thing that he did or said really that was cool was that he was having a conversation in the Talmud with, I don't even know who, with somebody. And he said the following: The greatest day was the one on which Israel received the Song of Songs. All of the writings in the Bible are holy, but the Song of Songs is the Holy of Holies. I have my thoughts on what that is. I honestly, like, I would probably disagree. I do like the Song of Songs. I think it's a spectacular teaching moment, and I really do stand by what I said about bringing it into this time of year. I'm not sure I would name it as like the greatest of the great in all of the Bible or in all of Jewish textual tradition, but it's certainly worth exploring. So I wanted to bring in Akiva and say, regardless of how we read the Song of Songs, the idea that it's the Holy of Holies, even if I don't fully agree with that idea, I think there's lots of other good books. I think that engaging with it this time of year could be really energizing and helpful as we try to prepare for the High Holidays.
And so I guess what I'd like to say about that is, why might Akiva have said this was the holiest of holies? Is it because sex is a very vulnerable place for us and it requires us to be vulnerable in order to really do our teshuva, to do our turning? Is it that it's something that's so different that it really shakes us up? I really like that. I'm going to ponder that for maybe for the rest of the month. So we're coming to the end of this episode, and you know, we put this question out there: what has love got to do with Elul? And I'm not sure that we've completely answered it, and we're fine with that. Judaism and we at Judaism Unbound are fine with open-ended questions and people figuring it out in their own way. But I do want to underscore just a little bit that love is part of being in relationship with ourselves, in relationship with others, in relationship to this concept God that we either like, don't like, or trying to figure out what it is, but that we're paying closer attention to it. This is a month that we could actually like, hey, what do I believe? And whatever it is, or what do I experience? Even belief is kind of a construct that we want to blow up. What is my experience? What do I want to get closer to? What am I in love with? What do I want to be in love with? And to utilize this time as an opportunity to explore that and explore it with yourself, with others, with us. And, you know, the sex and the steaminess is about passion and taking that passion into our lives.
I really want to thank Wendy Lash again for joining us as a co-host on this episode. You'll hear more from her in our next episode, our final bonus episode of Elul, number 4, where we will look at the idea of forgiveness, atonement, repentance, turning, teshuva, all of these takes on how we look inward and better ourselves in the coming years. So we'll be looking at that next bonus episode. We hope you'll join us. And in addition to joining us, we hope that you will be in touch with us. And we want to close out this episode by saying just that, as we always do. And there's a number of ways for you to do that. You can go to our Facebook page and Twitter and email, all of that good stuff. But we want to specifically highlight a few for this Elul Unbound initiative, specifically our in-person gatherings. They're not in-person physically, but they're face-to-face at the very least on Zoom. And we're having those each Friday of Elul. We've had a couple really great ones already, and we're looking forward to our ones that remain. So definitely come to those. You can find information about when they are, what the URL is, on our website. Just go to JudaismUnbound.com and you'll click the button for Zoom gatherings right from the homepage. And in addition to that, just feel free to be in touch with us via email, because we've got our elul@judaismunbound.com email address, elul@judaismunbound.com email address, that we are really looking forward to hearing from you on. So take us up on that. And whatever ways that you are experiencing Elul yourself, in whether that's through our resources or independent of them, find ways to let us know, because we really want them to inform how Elul could look in the future. So thank you very much for listening to this steamiest of episodes. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.